Okay, so good morning everyone, and welcome back for this morning Dharma discussion and also guided meditation. So I hope everyone have a nice rest last night and refresh. So as usual, we always start off with the words of loving kindness from the Metta Sutta. So hopefully we have the books or piece of paper around. Okay, so the words of loving kindness, the Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, not busy with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise will later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings they may be, whether they are weak or strong, or meeting none, the great or the mighty, the medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with her boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spread wings up to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred or ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from all drowsiness. One to sustain this recollection is said to be the supply abiding by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desire, is not born again into this hell. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. This is interesting. The pure-hearted one having clarity of vision is free from all desires. Okay. It's interesting. Well, today's topic, I would just like to discuss, just to encourage people on their practice and what will lead to beneficial and conditioned practice. So during the interview, that some things came out. So I realized maybe it's a good idea for me to share out some extra advice or aid to the practice. Because in meditation, sometimes it is difficult. And we sit down, we close our eyes, and it can be quite boring, just washing our breath. Sometimes I do admit, when I first started meditation, sometimes I will fall asleep. Even myself, I tend to fall asleep when I sit and meditate. But also I remember there was another technique I used to practice as a lay person, and it works. And as a monastic, there's a further practice tool, and it also works for some monastic. So I thought maybe I might share out that discussion with people. So it basically all started when I was a lay practitioner, and I was sitting down there in the temple, and we have usually visiting monks, but mainly these are visiting nuns from Singapore. So they come to the Buddhist center up in the mines. They come once a year. Then they'll do a lot of rites and rituals. So one of the rituals they do is they recite the Heart Sutra or the Dharma Sutra and all the texts from the Buddhist teaching. And while reciting those texts, it's done in Mandarin. It will last for like almost a whole day. In the morning, stop, have lunch, then continue again in the afternoon into the evening. Yep. So it was quite a long chanting session. So I'll be sitting there with my friend. There's a Buddhist. We all are Buddhists there. So while we're chanting, and so boring. I don't admit that I'm a Buddhist monk now. I realize it can be quite boring chanting for like a few hours. So as a lay person, I was even more bored. So I was sitting there, just looking at the text, and I was like, almost like falling asleep. Jeez, this is getting too long. So I noticed my friend. I asked my friend, "What are you doing?" And he's just doing visual meditation, looking at the text. And I asked him, "So how do you do that?" He just look at the a section on the page, and just stay on that. And that can be his meditation object. I go, "Oh, that's interesting." Yeah, so I try that. So sometimes when I go back home, I have a Buddha Rupa image, and sometimes I would stare at it like for a long period of time until the mind become calm and peaceful and tranquil. So yeah, so that is also another form of practice. In Theravada Buddhism, we don't really talk about visual meditation much. There is one, I'll talk later on, but I'll just tell you the basic meditation visual practice. So in Zen Buddhism, they also have that practice. So if you go to some Zen temple or monastery, you have the practitioner, like many lay people, they wear some kind of robes, just like a Buddhist monk, but it's usually grey and white. And they sit in a high platform, and they'll be all sitting, just staring at the wall, for the whole day or maybe a few hours. So one of our senior monks at Bodhiyana, I never mentioned who he is. So when he was a lay person, he did the same practice. He joined a Zen retreat, and he was sitting down just staring at the wall. And after a while, when his mind become calm, peaceful and tranquil, then he noticed the wall start to disappear and vanish. And he's going, "Wow, that's really strange." So the perception of mind would actually change things. So the wall actually vanishes. So when you go into deep samadhi, while staying in the object, then strange things will happen. But if that do happen, please seek for advice from Buddhist monk and ask for further instruction. Because the visual meditation can be very interesting, but also it can be a big distraction. So if you do have any interesting vision arise, it's always good to annoy it. Don't pay too attention to it. It's like the clouds passing by, or just the mind playing tricks. It's just to let it go. let it go. Don't hold on to it. Yep. So how you can practice the visual meditation is if you go home and you have a Buddha rupa, you can see the Buddha image, and that reminds me myself as compassion, loving kindness, truthfulness, wisdom, and enlightenment. So I reflect on that image and it arises that feeling in my heart. So the Buddha Rupa is a nice image to visualize. And also you see there's incense. People offer incense. So the incense is just reminds us of virtue. So when we smell the incense, the flavor or the smell of sandalwood, it's just reminds us of virtue, of keeping the five precepts. So I guess everyone knows what the five precepts is. So refrain from harming all living beings. Refrain from not taking what's not giving, so stealing. Refrain from sexual misconduct, so not having too many partners or failure, that leads to a lot of argument. Refrain from wrong speech, so or even harsh speech. And refrain from things like drugs and alcohol, because that basically clouds the mind. And you look at the world these days, there's so much argument and accident due to people just getting intoxicated with substance abuse and alcohol. So if we keep the five precepts, that keeps us, reminds us become a good, kind person, that don't do things wrong by body, speech and mind. So those are the five precepts. So when we smell the incense, it reminds us to be virtuous and should be kind. Then in the Buddha Rupa, this one we don't have the flowers, but sometimes people offer flowers. So the flower is just remind us of impermanent. Everything that is born, that's created, will bloom and is beautiful. Then after a few years, even a century, but a flower will basically bloom, it's beautiful, then it will still we go away and decay. So it reminds us that everything that is created, born, is impermanent. It won't last. It will disappear. So it just reminds us our time here is not forever. It can be quite short. So it's on us to practice and purify the mind, because the mind is basically timeless. Because when this body is gone, the mind will continue according to karma and blessing, will get another rebirth or seek for another destination. I don't know if that sounds proper. Yeah. The mind will create another world through the understanding of the mind. So this vision is quite interesting. And also last, we light a candle to offer the Buddha. So that candle reminds us of the wisdom that we develop in our heart and in our mind. So the symbol of the light is basically the light of wisdom that is found in us, in all our mind. So when we purify and develop the mind becomes pure, bright, and luminous. And it also reminds us the light of wisdom that is developed in our heart and in our mind. So the Buddha Rupa is a great reflection as a visual meditation object. So when you're home and you sit down, you close your eye, you fall asleep, or your mind is very scattered, then try visual meditation. So you just sit down, you can just stare at the candle light, make sure the candle light is not flickering, and just stare while washing your breath. Because the image of the Buddha, all this reflection, it's basically calm and gladdening our heart and our mind. Your eyes can be fully open or slightly closed, so you can still see the candle light. So that's a quick introduction to visual meditation. It's basically a siddha meditation. You still wash your breath, but you're just washing the candle light as an image and a reflection. And sometimes people say, would that lead any good result? I would say yes. If you do the visual meditation well, you do get good result out of it. So what I mean by that is at Bodhiyana Monastery, there's a trainee. Trainee is an anigarika. That's going to do train to become a monk later on after the 1 year training. So he was after his duties, that anigarika trainee will go for a walk around the monastery. So he'll walk around the boundary of the monastery. So at that time, he was walking, going for a walk around the monastery. The sunset was going down, 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 close to the ocean. So he decided just to sit down and just enjoy the beautiful view of the ocean and the sunset going down to the ocean. So he was just sitting down, staring at the sunset with a lot of peace, gratitude, and gladness in his heart. Just staring at the beautiful sunset. So we all like to stare at sunset because it's so beautiful. And because he's a practitioner, practicing in the monastery for a while, a few months, that peace and happiness arises in his heart. So while he's staring at the sunset, his mind slowly forms a nimitta. The nimitta is a sign of the mind. So it slowly became brighter, then his whole vision become whiter and glowing whiter. Yep. So this is basically meditation with visual object. Yep. So yeah, so that anigarika trainee feels very happy and peaceful. And he said that's interesting. You can even meditate with your eye closed using an object. Yeah, so visual meditation can actually get you quite calm, peaceful, and deep. Yeah. So, as I practice as a monastic now, that I realize, I walk around, I read the texts, I study the suttas, and the Buddha talk about generating samadhi nimitta. So samadhi nimitta arise when the mind is calm, peaceful, and tranquil. And also there's a lot of letting go of peace and calm. When you let go, you feel happy and peaceful and calm. And the nimittas arise usually when the mind is very tranquil and peaceful. So there's a breath nimitta. So when you watch the breath, the mind will gladden and brighten, become radiant. There are also loving kindness. So when we chant the loving kindness, we bring out that warmth, joy, happiness and kindness in our heart. And that also can generate a lot of gladness, calm and peace, then the nimittas also arise within the mind. It's visual, it's all inside, internal, it's just the mind that's radiant, calm and free. And this is a visual nimitta. So sometimes you go to monasteries and you realize you see a monk sitting down there just looking at skeletons, a skull, bones. So in some, you look at the internet, in some monastery around the world, especially Southeast Asia, you have monks sitting down there under a tree or in a kuti, and they're just looking at a skeleton or a skull. So you're must wondering, well, that's really weird. Strange kind of practice. But in Bodhiyana, we don't really have this kind of human skeleton around. I think Ajahn Brahm have a skull in his room where he can just practice watching it. Yep. But the monks and the anigarikas in the monastery, what they do is they go around, collect bones from the kangaroos, and they leave it outside their kuti. So on the open day, if you go for a walk up in the monastery during the open days when we have the function, like entrance to the rains or end of the rains catena, so you're welcome to walk around, check out other monastery, other kutis, see how the monks live. But sometimes you find, so outside some kutis, there's full of skeletons everywhere. Skeletons of kangaroos. It's all in one section. Sometimes all over the place. Sometimes it's scattered around the place. So it's basically a visual aid. So for monastic, when we sit down, the best is a human skeleton, a skull, where you sit down and you just stare at the image of the skeleton. And that reminds us of the human existence is impermanent. It won't last. This body will fall apart, then it will decay, then we'll depart, and when it's cremated, it becomes ash. But if we have a bone that reminds us of life that is short, and we're not immortal, yep, there's a period of time, we get old, we get sick, and we'll pass away. So when the Buddha was Prince Sasatala, and when he went out to the city with his friend in the carriage, he saw an old man, he saw a sick man, he saw a dead man that's dying, then he saw an ascetic, and that say, wow. He asked his attendant, what is this? And he said, this is part of life. People get old, people get sick, and people will die. Yep. And the Princess Dartala was quite moved and upset. But he's so well protected in the palace. So as soon as he learned about this, he realized human existence, it's not long. All this will happen to all of us. So yeah, also he saw a ascetic that's practicing to end samsara. Yep. So this skeleton, visual aid, is also very good for monastic. It might be extreme, so I don't really recommend it for lay practitioner. So it's always good to stare at a Buddha image instead of a skeleton. But for monastic, if we sit down and meditate, and we just glaze on the skeleton or the bone for quite a long time, the mind become tranquil, calm, and peaceful. But see, minus, everything's impermanent. It won't last. So as the mind become calm and peaceful, and sometime a subanimitta will form of just an image, like just an image of a light. So it comes from the whiteness of the bone. So if this white light will arise, then it will be absorbed in the practitioner's mind. So it will be consumed in the suba image. So that leads to a lot of peace and stillness in the mind. But this kind of super practice is good because it programs the mind to see things as impermanent. And you see, when you practice the super practice all the time, it becomes embedded in the mind. So one of the practitioner monk that I know as a friend, he told me one time he went to like brush his teeth. He does the super practice, looking at skeletons and stuff. When he looked at his face in the mirror, it just turned into a skeleton. I was going, ooh, interesting. Brush my teeth. You can see his bone better. Yeah, and another monk that I know, he says when he's taking a shower, he looked down and his feet turned into a skeleton. Yeah, so with this vision, the super practice is wonderful. And sometimes if we can program the mind, you can get good result. Yep. But I don't recommend it. Please don't try it. Okay. But I recommend just use a visual meditation, looking at the image and the light. Yeah. It can be a candlelight. It can be just looking, gazing as a Buddha image. Because once the mind becomes tranquil, calm, and sharp, if you have a little ant that crawl past it, you can look at a little ant, you can see it's like the mind becomes so sharp that it can look deep into the ant. You can see the feet of the ant and even see the hairs in the ant's leg. So the mind's become very sharpened and heightened. Yep. And even lay people that come and do retreats here at the monastery, after quite a while of making the mind calm and tranquil, the vision becomes very sharp. Yeah. So this mental image can be developed, and some practitioners do have the ability to generate images, and we call that complex limiters that arise. It can be places, can be faces, it can even be sound and smell. But when that do arise, please see a Buddhist or a teacher, a monastic, that's a meditation teacher, and ask for advice, because you do need guidance to guide you through all these visual and limiters. It's quite complex and can become confusing, but best is not to get too caught up. It comes and it goes, and the main thing is just to be peaceful and not to get caught up with all this visual image.
So it does arise in meditation, but also you can use the visual aid, and it can arise through that. I was looking at the internet, and I found some group of people that are not practitioner, and they also have visual image that arise in when they've been locked away. So what I mean by that is I came across a documentary where people are in the prison system, and sometimes if they misbehave, they are put into solitary confinement in prison, where they're kept in a cell where there's no lights from outside. So it's in a dark room, just in the concrete floor. And sometimes very maddening, that experience. But some people, they just sit there and just nothing they can do. Just enjoy the quiet darkness, cold of the cell, the prison cell, in solitary confinement. But some of them describe that when they are locked up in solitary confinement for a few days, after a while, when their mind becomes calm and peaceful, then all this visual image start to arise in their mind. They see places, they see people, they even like hear sound. Yep. So when all the five senses is shut down, then the mind is so powerful, who start to generate another world within the mind, and it will come out within our vision. Yep. So sometimes when people go on long retreats and they sit and meditate for a long time, when we shut down all the five senses, the mind sometimes will generate another world within the mind. So we call this complex limiters. So when it arises, please seek advice from a senior monk and ask questions. Because all these things arise, but the main thing is we try and develop a pure white limiter. So the pure white limiter of the mind, or the pure mind. Okay, I hope that makes sense. So you can practice that. So even we do a guided meditation here, and not now, later. We still got a while to go. So we do a guided meditation. You find that if your eyes fully closed, you feel like you're going to sleep, or your mind is wandering around, then what you can do, you can open your eyes slightly and just meditate, watching the breath. But when you're back home, then you can do the visual meditation. Just try it out and see if the result will come or not. If not, that is just a good experience. Mm. Yep. I mean, it is hard to practice because our mind can be very scattered. But the Buddha say, there are three things. There's one, the hardest thing for a practitioner to do when they become a monastic. So the first hardest thing for a practitioner when they first join the monastery is basically to leave the world. Because for all monastic, when we leave the world, we leave our lay life, we leave our family, we leave our freedom, we leave all the entertainment and things that we like to do. So leaving the world is quite difficult. So especially families. We leave our families behind and we stay in the monastery. And sometimes the mind always long to be in the world again. So leaving the world and staying in the monastery is quite hard because a lot of conditioning is there. Because since we are a child, we are conditioned to do things, to achieve things, and to enjoy lay life. So when a person ordained, if the meditation is not strong yet, then it can be quite difficult to live in the monastery. So the Buddha say, to leave the world is very hard for the monastic. So leaving the world is one of the hardest things to do. And the second hardest thing to do is to be happy in monastic life. So when you're happy in monastic life, you're happy to be alone, happy to stay in the kuti by yourself, happy to spend many, many hours by yourself in the kuti as a hermit. So when this retreat is finished, I'm very happy going back to my kuti. where I don't have to talk and think. Yeah, and the mind can be tranquil again. Yeah. Sometimes when I first came here, a bit of anxiety. I was going, wow, I go stay here. And there's 60 people in the room, and the camera's on live stream. So I do have a bit of anxiety and suffering too. But once I start talking, the Dharma will take over. Then I'll let the Dharma do the work. Okay, sorry. Sorry about that. Too much information. Yeah, so when you learn to be happier as a monastic, you're happy to fit into the Sangha, to work together in the community, happy to do the chores. There's not a lot of work. We only meet in the morning for breakfast, then we walk for like 2 hours in the morning, then we all come together for lunch, and some of us will take our lunch back to our kutia to eat. Yep. But we spend a lot of time. Sometimes we only spend like maybe 3 hours as a Sangha together. And during the Vasa, we only spend 1 hour together. And during the Vasa, we might be together to recite the Patimukha, the training rules for the monks. Also the nuns have their own training rules. But for the monks, the training rules is 227 precepts. So this precept or rules is basically to help us to let go of our defilements, greed, anger, and also self. Because when we live together in harmony as a Sangha, we have to learn to basically get along with one another. Yeah, it's almost like living in a family again. When you're stuck with basically our senior monks, our middle monks, and our junior monks, then our trainees. So the trainees, they carry a lot of baggage. So yeah, sometimes they have a difficult time. But the senior monks is there to guide the junior monks. And the middle monks are still practicing. Yep. So like, I don't know, like me and Bodhidharma, Venerable Bodhidharma, we've been enrolled for, Bodhi, you've been enrolled for 13 years? No, yeah. 12 years. 12 years this year.
Yeah.
Yep. I've been enrolled for about 14 years. Because I was anagarika for 1.5 years, then was a novice for 2 years. So now it's a bhikkhu. So for me, it's about 14 years. Yep. Yeah, so living in a monastery, living in harmony, and learning to be happy by yourself. Yep. This is one of the hardest things to do. Yep. So this is the hardest thing to do, to practice as a Buddhist monastic. And the third hardest thing to do as a monastic is learning to practice, live according to Dharma, so according to the suttas and the Vinaya. So the suttas is basically the teaching or the words of the Buddha. To learn to keep all the rules, learn to practice and behave like a monastic, learn to restrain and to let go of the craving, and to still the mind, and learn to be happy by yourself. Happy to basically keep the rules and to practice and develop the Eightfold Path. Because the Eightfold Path is basically the right view, right living, right understanding, right thoughts, right action, right speech. I think there's a few. I think Bodhi is good at explaining
right,
that.
Right livelihood.
Yeah, right livelihood. So we will practice according to the Eightfold Path. Then that will basically allow our mind to incline towards stillness and letting go. Because without stillness and letting go, then wisdom won't arise. So this three foundation of sila, samadhi, and panya. So sila is virtue. Then you got the higher sila, or the higher virtue, is basically keeping the 277 precepts. Then the higher samadhi is to develop the deep meditation up to the jhanas and up to the awakening stages. And that's basically the higher panyala or high wisdom. So as a monastic, we develop these three foundations of the higher sila, the higher samadhi, and the higher wisdom, higher panyala. So these three will grow together. Yep. So this is the last, the hardest thing to do as a monastic, is to live according to Vinaya and to Sutta, the teaching of the Buddha. So these three things as a monastic is the hardest thing to practice, to live the world, to be happy in monastic life, and to practice according to Vinaya and the Sutta, or training rules and the teaching. Yep. So this also applies to us as a practitioner. So when you leave the world, you have to give up a lot of responsibility to come here. So when you come here, you learn to restrain by not speaking too much, restrain from not overeating, restrain from not using the internet or using a smartphone if possible, and also restrain from our mind going out into the world. Yep. So you do have a glimpse of practicing as a monastic here. Then you listen to the teaching from the monks and the guidance from the meditation, and hopefully that will condition your mind to deepen, to calm the mind, to clear the mind, to understand wise reflection in order to develop wisdom inside you. Bodhi, do you have anything to add?
No, great, thank you. it's already 10 past 9, so have 20 minutes.
20
and then
minutes.
We already have interviews again. I saw a lot of people put their names down. So we'll try to talk to everyone. There will be another opportunity this afternoon. What was it, at 2:30, I think, when we finish off. There will be a cup of tea, and we will be sticking around. So if people wish to talk to us, and then that's possible as well. Mm. But as you hopefully know, the Buddhist Society of Western Australia is a big organization. So we do have the monastery next door for the monks. And we have a monastery in Gidjiganup for the nuns. And we have a center in the city, which is called Dhammaloka in Nolamara, where the monks and nuns go to teach over the weekend. And we also have a branch temple in Kusala, or it's called Kusala Hermitage, where I live at the moment. That's in Rolleystone, close to Armidale. And there's another one down in Albany. So if you want to come and hang out at the monastery, offer a meal, or talk to a senior monk, these places are available to you. So please make use of them.
Okay. So we'll start with the meditation again. So just see meditation as just a conditioning our mind to become silent and mindful. So it takes a time and practice to make the mind silent and peaceful. So I always like to give a simile it's quite difficult. When we are young, when we are born, when we grow up, we are always conditioned to think, to plan, and to work. Because we value thinking, planning, to be really good at our job and our responsibility, and to be very smart in society. So the thinking, the planning, and the wandering mind is like the right hand. We start writing our right hand all the time. For people that's right hand or the left hand. So the right hand, when you write with the right hand, that's the thinking, the planning mind. But now in the monastery, we're trying to learn to write with the left hand. So the left hand is the mind that's calm, peaceful, and fully aware. So that's why it's always be hard to change from writing with the right hand to the writing with the left hand. Yep. So meditation, and our behavior is the same. It's just learning to learn to write with the right hand. That is the calm, peaceful mind that's free from thinking or planning. So this is the thinking and planning mind, and this is the calm and peaceful mind. Yep. So it will take time. Okay, so please sit comfortably. And you can gently close your eye. With your eye closed, if you find that your mind become duller, then what you can do, you can slightly open your eye just to let in some vision or some light, and that will keep you more awake. If you find it's not a problem, then you close your eye completely. And we always start off with body scanning first, just to ground our body and to ground our awareness within this body and within this mind. So we start off with body scanning. From the top of our head, we just relax our head, relax our face, and relax our jaw. And then we relax our throat. Then we loosen our upper body, especially our shoulder. Now we quickly relax and loosen both our arms. Then relax our hands and our fingers, both right and left. And next, we relax our back from the top of our upper back, then gently down to our lower back, where we sit on the cushion and relax. And now we just feel and notice our tummy. Notice, make sure it's not too tight. And just relax our tummy. And now we bring our awareness to both our legs. Make sure it's nice and loose, not too stiff. And relax our feet, our legs, both our legs. Then finally, relax our feet, both our feet. Relax. Make sure it's nice and loose and comfortable. Now we ground it within the body. And now we can finally bring our awareness back up to our face. And be aware of our breathing in and out, calmly and softly. And we allow our breathing to calm our mind and relax the body. We delight in breathing in and out, peace and letting go. Peace and letting go. you find your mind is still wandering all over the place, it's okay. Just let it wander a bit. And after a while, when it's tired of wandering, then allow it to slowly come back to the breath and to the body. And just relax the body. And gently go back to our breathing. Meditation is not about stopping the thinking. It's basically to allow everything to settle, to calm, and become peaceful and quiet. The less we are thinking and wondering, then we slowly find peace and happiness and freedom from a quiet mind. And we allow our thoughts just to become an echo in the background. Please continue and stay with the breath.